So next presentation is prepared by Ms. Denise Kakai, but she was unable to travel. So Suzanne will be presenting again. And this is about working with a community for nitrate monitoring in the WWAMA project.
Well, you're stuck with me again. Denise Kakai is a planner with Lane Council of Governments and was unable to make it. Audrey Eldridge is the newly retired groundwater management area coordinator with the Department of Environmental Quality. They're trying to refill that position. Jana Compton is my direct supervisor at EPA, and Alan Henning is their EPA regional representative for Region 10. This project in the Southern Willamette Valley, it really is, we're shifting gears here, kind of away from the hard science, to working directly with the community in terms of looking at a groundwater management area, or a GWAMA, in terms of what is it, where is this one specifically, what is being done in terms for the management of the GWAMA, and how we can measure progress. Briefly, a review is the Human Health Standard designated by EPA for nitrate contamination is 10 milligrams per liter, and then the state designated action level in Oregon is 70% of that. Well, there are a lot of journeys that need to be taken to establish a GWAMA. You need to document contamination, declare the GWAMA, appoint an advisory committee of local stakeholders, form an action plan, implement that action plan, and then resign the GWAMA declaration eventually. In the Southern Willamette Valley, over 9,000 rural residents rely directly on groundwater for their main source of drinking water. When I'm talking about a human health issue, I'm mostly referring to methemoglobinemia, or blue baby syndrome, which is can affect infants below 3 months of age, as well as nursing mothers. Our potential sources for nitrate contamination to groundwater in the GWAMA come from septic systems, commercial agriculture, confined animal feeding operations, as well as larger scale dairies. We mentioned the 1990 study in the previous talk, this lysimeter study done in Lane County that documented a lot of nitrate leaching below the root zone of several crops throughout a fairly large spatial area. Lane County has most of the population within the GWAMA area, and this in part prompted Oregon Department of Environmental Quality to install and start to monitor several groundwater management wells. They tested in the 2000s over 400 of those wells. Some of those are also domestic drinking water wells, and found that over 100 of those wells tested above the actionable limit. In 2002, they went back, retested those high wells, and over 90% of those were still over the actionable limit. I like to call this the diagram of the dancing pig. You'll see it a lot, so if you don't see it right away, that's fine. But it generally delineates the outline of the entire study area for DEQ's monitoring wells. And then the graph on your right shows the resampled high wells and shows the area in which they are mostly concentrated. If we overlay a hydrogeologic map on top of those nitrate results, we see that in this yellow band of the upper sedimentary unit, it's not as confining of a soil layer. So you have much more permeability and direct action or direct contact to groundwater. Those high grass seed fields that we were talking about in the previous talk, those are located right around here. This is also a high septic area system concentration. There are a lot of septic systems in this area, but we'll talk about that in just a moment. So documented a problem, and now the groundwater management area was declared in 2004. So the dancing pig area, this is the ear, the eye, the snout, hand, if you want to say that. This is a very large area, and the GWAMA itself is smaller and encompasses most of those high nitrate groundwater wells. Not all of them, but most of them. So this is the whole sampling area, and then this is the actual groundwater guama. And so the boundaries are really set to be so that you understand that you're in the guama. They're bordered by the south, by Eugene, second largest city in Oregon, to the north by Corvallis. The 99 is a major thoroughfare, and then also Muddy Creek is the easternmost boundary. And this guama sits above the very shallow, unconfined Willamette Aquifer, which sits on top of the larger and deeper regional aquifer. In this area, most of the land use is for agriculture, over 90%. And so where is this nitrate contamination coming from? We have eight confined animal feeding operations within the guama. Those range from chicken, hogs, and cattle. And on this slide, the tons of nitrogen that you're seeing here and in the next few slides, this comes from the Lane Council of Governments put together a guama designated nitrogen budget. Not just large animal feeding operations are contributing sources, but also your backyard pets and small-scale farming. Then we also have septic systems contributing over 75 tons annually, and some contributions from large permitted waste facilities. Our fertilizer sources come mostly from commercial agriculture. We also have golf courses and backyard gardening. And most of the nitrate contamination is determined to be coming from agriculture and synthetic fertilizers, which is represented in the blue of this pie chart. And that's most of our land use is commercial agriculture in this area. So we've documented that there's a problem. We've declared a guama. We found out where it's all coming from. And now we're bringing together a group of stakeholders to form the Guama Committee. And they're an advisory committee to the state representing local land uses from agriculture to industry. And they're all coming together to form the action plan down the Strategy River. So now we've gone through on our journey through documenting, declaring, appointing the advisory committee, and creating an action plan. Now that action plan, we're currently implementing that. Eventually, the ultimate goal is to not have a groundwater management area, which would mean we wouldn't have any more groundwater contamination. Our implementation steps are doing education outreach. We have K-12 curricula developed. We also do free nitrate testing in schools. OSU Extension leads this effort. For our lysimeter sampling of the previous talk, I'm always going out with a nitrate kit, and whoever we talk to, we always offer that as a service as well, and have certainly gotten the word out. Even today, though, the guama is now going on 11 years old. People who live in the guama still don't know what it is or that there is even a problem. And so this education is really huge in terms of getting the word out. I mentioned the concentration of septic systems. This is one example of a town in the southern part of the guama, a population of over 500 people, all relied on septic systems. A few years ago, they converted into a wastewater treatment facility, which is online now. The septic tanks have been decommissioned. So this is a step of improvement, one way that we've been making progress with the local community. We also do focus groups periodically, which involves social marketing. And we're also, it's great to educate the kids, but people who actually have the septic tanks and the groundwater wells that they're relying on need to be able to know how to treat them, how to work with the systems that they have to keep them safe. DEQ is also continuing to do its quarterly groundwater monitoring with those wells. So recent results from 2012 to 2014 show that 33% of wells decreased in nitrate concentration. And of the highest wells for nitrate, 54% of those have also shown a decrease in concentration over time. So we are taking positive steps forward, but we're not yet at the ability or at the stage of being able to resign the guama. Currently, there's a lot of discussion as to what that might look like. Currently, the guama committee is going to be assessing the guama again in the same way that it did before the guama was declared to do a comparison. And eventually, the goal is to have clean drinking water. Thanks, guys.
Your pie chart shows that the majority of the nitrate coming from agricultural portion, and I saw or didn't see much effort in the producer in the manner of nitrogen management on the farm. Is that something that is impactful or?
No, it certainly.
The septic systems were very little in that.
Yes. Yes, very much so. It certainly is in specifically with the lysimeter project that I talked about earlier. This is one of the major ways I feel like most of my job is acting as a community liaison between growers and kind of this guama or the EPA kind of, although I'm not an EPA employee. In terms of looking at, we have growers within our study that do several different types of land management practices. We have organic, what you would call conventional growers, to what you could even call precision agriculture growers. And so we are working with everybody. It's not our job to make recommendations. This is good, this is bad. But we are, one of our partners with NRCS is certainly able to do something like that and also offer solutions with the growers. So that is a big part of our interacting with our participating growers. And then also, I'm a member of Farm Bureau, Women in Agriculture as well, and there's a lot of that community and local meetings that are attended by growers, and it's a slow process, but it's a process of becoming part of the community and discussing what's going on. You kind of start talking with them and they start rolling their eyes. Oh, nitrate, everybody knows there's a problem and we're to blame. But it is a positive step that is being taken.
Is Land Grant University conducting any kind of research to address management? How management can we change to reduce nitrate?
Absolutely. So we are partnered with OSU Extension, which OSU is Oregon State University, is the land grant university in Corvallis. And they are always limited with funding, but they are producing new fertilizer guides. They just produced a new one for perennial ryegrass as well as, I believe it was tall fescue. And so these things are very helpful because a lot of the current fertilizer guides for row crops, I may not be able to speak for peppermint, but they're extremely old and at this point outdated. So yes, that's a huge thing that needs to be updated. The OSU Extension? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. A lot of the irrigation work was undertaken by John Selker in the 1990s. And he was really instrumental in terms of getting producers to constantly check their gauges on the irrigation lines to make sure that everything is functioning properly so that on one area of your line, you're not overwatering, whereas on the next gauge over, you're underwatering because it's clogged, stuff like that. Mostly we're still trying to suss that out with using the stable isotope data, but you can infer that it is an increase of better management practices from agriculture. The sources, currently mostly being attributed to nitrate or synthetic fertilizer. And there are not generally cover crops being grown dramatically throughout the Guama as well. So you do have periods of the crop comes off and it's bare ground throughout some of the heaviest times of our rainy season. I'm not a field crop representative, but from my understanding, peppermint, it's really the irrigation. And especially in the 1990s, you did have a lot, the OSU fertilizer recommendations are 250 pounds of N per acre. Whereas in some areas of the Guama in the 1990s, it was documented that over 500 pounds were being applied. And this is insurance for the crop. And so you are also applying it in multiple times throughout the year while you're irrigating. It's generally starting mid-April, and then generally every two weeks or so, you'll apply again until about mid-June when you do some rapid applications to get the plant to lodge. And so with that and with your heavy irrigation, you really are pushing things through the soil. Yes. The size of not all of the CAFOs, the confined animal feeding operations in the Guama are created equal, in the sense of these northern ones are fairly small. There are only really two very big ones, and I don't have comparative numbers, but these two are extremely large, or our two largest facilities. And this is our city of Coburg, where this is all part of this yellow band of the upper sedimentary unit, where it is fairly permeable soils. You add that high concentration of a CAFO, you're definitely seeing some results. We do have groundwater management wells located by those two areas as well. Yes. Phosphorus is being measured with these DEQ groundwater management wells. Our study with the lysimeters from the previous talk, our first year and about a quarter, we were also measuring phosphorus. However, because this is free samples being processed, the DEQ lab needed to cut that back, which we totally understand. But phosphorus is being sampled quarterly with the DEQ wells. I haven't focused on the phosphorus data yet, yeah. But the other thing is, the Oregon Department of Agriculture, who manages all of the CAFOs, are also doing soil tests at each one of the facilities. So there is also that data set out there. Thank you so much. I have project handouts if anybody would like one. Thanks.